welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today, I am joined by Dana Carman and Joel Janowitz, and we're going to be talking about the work that they have brought into the world that they call wayfinding, which is where they take leaders and teams out into the natural world, where they use the aliveness of nature as a mirror to help bring clients into their truth more deeply. So Dana and Joel have been good friends for 20 years or more and high-level coaches for over 30 years, respectively. Dana has been working as a coach and consultant to leaders of more than 200 organizations on five continents. He's co-founded several pioneering consulting firms, including Clarion Consulting, Action Inquiry Associates, and Pacific Integral. Joel is a coach and consultant working with CEOs and top teams. His clients have included venture-backed startups, growth stage and large companies, including the NatWest Bank, Electronic Arts, FedEx, Procter & Gamble, Nissan, and numerous clients in the world of education and nonprofit. He was also a co-founder of Innovation Associates, helping pioneer the body of work known as organization learning, described by the co-founder of Innovation Associates, Peter Senge. And in our conversation today, we're really going to get into what happens when you engage in leadership development work, transformational work in nature, when you cross that threshold into nature. What does nature afford in this experience? I'd really appreciate it if you'd consider leaving a review of this podcast. It helps spread the word about it and build the following. All right, let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Dana Carman and Joel Janowitz. All right, so welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. We're trying a new kind of intro here. We're kind of transitioning the whole podcast from SoundCloud to Red Circle, which probably the listeners won't know, but it means that now we're going to do a different intro. I'm going to introduce my two podcasts guests live today, and then we'll move into the conversation. So I'm joined by Joel Janowitz and Dana Carman. How are you doing, each of you?
Good. Good morning. Good to be here.
Great. Great to see you both.
So I'll just say a little bit about you, and then I would like you each to just say a few more words. But if I begin with you, Dana, you've been working as an advisor and a consultant and an executive coach to more than 200 visionary organizations on five continents. And you've co-founded several pioneering consulting firms, including Clarion Consulting, Action Inquiry Associates, and Pacific Integral. So we're in good hands today. And Joel, I'll just say a few things about you that I pull from your bio. You're a coach, consultant, and senior advisor. And you have also launched and ran your own companies. You were the co-founder and managing director of Innovation Associates, the firm that brought the prestigious work of Peter Senge's book, The Fifth Discipline, to companies worldwide. And you were also the vice president of Arthur D. Little, which is a global management consulting and technology development company. There's a lot more I could say about each of you, but you know, when we read out these bios too much, it can get a little kind of stilted. So what did I miss about each of you? What would you like to add just, you know, in a minute or so about what you're each up to in the world? And I know you collaborate together and we're going to talk about that in the podcast, but yeah.
Go ahead, Daniel. I'll let you dive in.
Yeah. I think the thing I want to say when I reflect back on being in this field of coaching and transformational education for my whole adult life, it's been a lifeline. There's been different expressions of it, but it's been kind of the heart of my own development. It's been I don't know that I would have focused as much on my own development if my work hadn't been for others. For doing this kind of work, it's been both a profession, but it's also been a deep calling, and it's always been alive and fresh, almost always. And so I feel like it's been a privilege to be in this world over the last 30 plus years, and it's getting more fun.
I guess it all depends how you define fun. But I would agree, Dana. My experience is similar, of having been in this profession for several decades. And I think the through line for me, both internally for myself, but also in my work, has been the question of how people in organizations can bring into being their highest aspirations. I think all of us go through life with a set of desires, hopes, aspirations for what we want for ourselves, for our families, our communities, the world we live in. The question of how people come together in an organizational setting, a team setting, and the role of leaders in catalyzing that and creating conditions for that, for people to actually be able to express those aspirations in their day-to-day interactions and in their larger sense of calling and mission they bring to work, has been a longstanding curiosity and driver for me.
Amazing. Yeah, we're going to really get into this topic of calling because I think it really fits with wayfinding, which is the what you're both up to in the world. Actually, I just want to sort of ask before we talk about that, how are you two each making sense of, Dana, you just said like it's getting more fun, and I'm curious what you mean by that, and do you see that there's an increasing appetite for people to to orient to purpose and calling in these times with everything that's unfolding.
I guess when I'm saying it's getting more fun, I'm meaning it in a couple of ways. One, it feels to me like we're living in a wild, disruptive, and dangerous time. And I'm very aware as I start the new year, that there are things that are going to happen in all of our lives that we can't predict right now. And maybe, and like things could go so many different ways in the personal, the interpersonal, and the global. And so it feels to me like, and where we source this work from is being tuning into the call of the time, tuning in. Greg Thomas, who I know somebody you've had on the show, and he and others speak about this notion of a post-tragic sensibility of, we're focused in our development, we're focused on our own life and our own success, and then we begin to wake up to the moment that we're living in. We begin to look at some of the statistics around every possible, we call it the poly crisis, and it's easily overwhelming and disturbing. And then there's another place to stand, which is giving what we're here to give with for its own sake, to honor, to be an expression of the beauty that we see. And to be able to amplify and evoke that for its own sake. And, I would call that as a place, this place to stand in a time that's heartbreaking and quite disruptive. So when I say it's fun, the other part I want to say is from that space and from being able to see, I guess this practice of impermanence, which is a thread through every spiritual practice. I'm very much in touch with the preciousness of having good health and the good fortune to be able to do this kind of work, and that there's a time it's going to end. And so as I relax into the truth of that, I feel much more joy and much more inspiration. But it's not like a, what is it? It's like a, as Leonard Cohen would say, like a brokenhearted hallelujah. Not like when I was younger, like sometimes there's a little of this, but mostly it's a different kind of joy. So I pass it to my the baton to Joel.
Well, I think I'll say a little bit about how Dana and I work together. So we met around 20 years ago, and our friendship really developed in nature. So we would go backpacking together in the mountains in the summer. We'd spend time in the mountains skiing in the winter. And in those times together, we would do really deep dives and reflective conversations around our respective work, our clients, what we were doing, how we were orienting, where we were stuck and struggling. And after, after those conversations, we'd always say, "Boy, that was amazing. We should work together." Because this is very, kind of complementary but very different ways of seeing the world. And so after about 15 years of saying that, we finally started actually working together a couple of years ago, and have certainly found it to be true. I'll say for me, it's really added a huge dimension to the quality and impact of my work.
5 years ago, by the way.
5 years ago, okay, and added a lot to our friendship. But the roots of it were spending time in nature. And as we started doing our work, this quality of spending time in nature is something we then extended to our work with our clients. I'm a little oversimplifying the journey to do that, and each of us came at it in different ways. But to the question of work being fun, it's almost as Dana was saying, it's a matter of perspective around in the way of looking at the world. You could easily get depressed. You could look at the insanity of things, the polarization, whether it's around economic crises, social crises, climate crises. There's any sector of society you look at, you can say there's a crisis that if you project it forward in time, whether time is 5 years, 25 years, 50 years, at some point you say the thing just goes to hell in a handbasket, and you pull your hair out and say it's already happened, and get immobilized. So the question is, where does one stand? And particularly as a coach or as someone who works with systems, whether those are organizational systems, in our case, what we do is what's a place to stand that actually has people deeply grounded in reality as it is, but not in a way that is immobilizing or disempowering, but also is a place that allows people to move and do their part. And, Dana, the way you put it, I thought was really beautiful around what is it that I bring? What's my offering here that is an expression of my best contribution to the world as I see it for its own sake? There's always a dichotomy in this work around we're working to improve and fix and change things. And at the same time, the capacity to completely accept things as whole and complete and recognize the perfection of the way they are. And, this is true internally in ourselves, in our one-on-one relationship with clients, but it's a stance, I think, in relation to the larger global crises that we're all in also. That, of course, we want things to be different and we want to do our best to change and improve them. And recognizing that it is the way it is, and there's a, I don't want to say perfection, like it's fine the way it is, because it's not fine, but yet there's a beauty and a perfection in it that needs to be appreciated and accepted in order to actually do our best work to help things move forward. I'm not sure if that is clear or not, but that's, I think, speaks to what's underneath that notion of work is getting more interesting, more challenging, but also more, I would say, more enlivening at the same time.
Yeah, it does seem like these times are, I use that phrase soul-making times. And what I mean by that is, yeah, the invitation through the crises that we face is an invitation into what's my music to play here? What gifts am I here to give? And that you, Joel, you kind of named it, like the place where I give them from isn't necessarily like I don't need anything back from it, and I'm not trying to necessarily save the world. It's just, I can play that music in my own sweet way and just as an act of service. And so something you each said, I think, is worth
I want to explore a bit further with you, which is like how can we find that place that you each described where, you know, I'm open to the, you know, I'm not in denial about what's unfolding in the world, and yet I'm not, you know, overcome with depression or sense of hopelessness. You know, I feel that sense of joy, or, you know, sense of wanting to a fun, wanting to serve. How can we access that? And maybe this is where we talk about wayfinding, you know, the work you do with leaders in nature, or not. But yeah, that's my question.
I generally find myself a little stumped by how to questions like that. There was a time in my life where a colleague shared a quote with me, said, "Every day I wake up torn between the desire to fix or save the world and the desire to enjoy or savor the world. This makes it very hard to plan my day." And that was true for me for many years, and it's not true anymore. It's very easy for me to plan my day, integrating those. And if I think about how did I get there? I don't have a simple answer for that, or I should say I have a simple answer, but it's not easy. But this process of continual, for me, it was a process of continuously working on acceptance of what is, like not arguing with reality, whether it's my own who I am and my strengths, my shadows, you know, all those things we talk about in our profession, or the way the world is, and my frustration and anger at the political system or the economic system, and wealth disparities in society. You know, there's a long list of things, but doing the work to actually accept things as they are, and in the face of that, still aspire to want things to be different, and have those things not be separate, like one's over here and one's over there, but live together. And I don't have a simple how-to in that, except for that was the journey over several years. I know, Dana, how do you reconcile?
Yeah, I feel like I'm, you know, very much a work in progress and discovering this as I go along. And, you know, one aspect of being able, like, this is like one of the things that I, when my wife and I were looking at this coming year, you know, we're doing this on early January, was connecting more to joy, being joy. And for me, just, you know, we're talking about wayfinding as a process that Joel and I do with clients of going into nature, but it's also both of us, you know, we talk almost every day. Both of us get out into nature, even nature sometimes is just the neighborhood, and letting go of this kind of vision and opening up to the larger world that being with the sky and the mountains and the river and whatever's there, something begins to relax and something else begins to open up and joy begins to arise. So there's, you know, there's the practice of letting go and opening to joy. And then there's also turning towards the difficult feelings that are there, and staying with them and being able to be there for myself, being able to feel what's hard, what I usually want to turn away from, and being able to get better at ongoingly at stopping and I'll use the word dying to what's there. And what often happens is there's strong emotion. The emotion gets expressed. Something relaxes and something else opens up. And Joel, you know, we demonstrated this when you invited me to work with Thomas Hubel on the Coaches Rising podcast. You know, I had the privilege of being coached which in a certain way was, you know, saying being coached is being able to really pay attention to what's here and have someone else be able to feel with me and give back to me what they're feeling. There's an alchemical movement that happens there. So that does that feel there's that's both something we do with clients, but it's also just something we do with ourselves, we do with each other during the course of a day. And we also teach our clients, give our clients practices to be able to do that for themselves. So I know it's kind of a long answer about joy, but I find there's the joy of just going outside and letting go and opening up, and that's easy. But then there's the joy that comes through the window of the pain of the, you know, and for me all the time, it's dropping out of my obsessive thinking and my planning mind and drop being curious about what's going on in the body and what's happening in the emotional body. And there's always something there when the thinking is wound up. I imagine you both could speak to your version of that too.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of makes me think of what you were saying about the post-tragic as well, where there's this kind of joy. Because it's interesting, because joy has become a big theme for me in the last 2-3 months. You know, this kind of joy, which is, it's not like exclusive, you know, like if grief comes in, you know, if I open to the loss that's occurring, that's, you know, going to kind of push that joy out, or it's a threat to that kind of joy. It's a kind of joy which actually, you know, is kind of blooms through a broken heart and through being broken open, and that actually, you know, there's a kind of that can actually even blossom by feeling those difficult emotions and accessing the feeling body and attuning to that more. So, yeah, I think that's really beautiful. And maybe like, let's kind of situate this conversation a bit more inside of wayfinding now, because we've named it a few times, but could you tell us what is wayfinding? We kind of alluded to what it is, but yeah, what is wayfinding? Who do you do it with, and how and stuff?
Yeah. You want me to take it, Dana?
Yeah, I'm sure I'll pile on.
Yes, exactly. So there's different levels we can answer, but at one level, basically when we talk about wayfinding, we're talking about a process where we take clients into nature. It could be for half a day, it could be for 2 or 3 days, around a set of questions that nature is, initially I'll say, my understanding was nature was kind of a context or backdrop or a setting for it. But what we've discovered over time is actually nature is an active participant in the conversation. And the questions are simplest way to say is, what time is it in the world? How do you understand what time it is in the world? What time is it in the life of your organization, if you're a leader in an organizational setting, and what time is it in your life? And how do you inquire into those questions and see where they meet? And so there's a conversation internally within you as the client, with between us and the client, and between us and nature. And what's interesting in nature is one, we've seen people have a very different set of possibility, literally when you're outside with a big horizon, that people's horizons, their capacity for more expansive thinking and sense of possibility shifts. At the same time, for some people, the more significant aspect of being in nature is the capacity for deeper acceptance of what is. Like, we're walking on the earth, and the earth doesn't care who you are or where you've been or what you're embarrassed or ashamed about, or, you know, it takes you as you are walking on the path. And there's a capacity for acceptance of what is as part of something larger, and feeling oneself not as someone walking in nature, but feeling oneself as a part of nature, that there's a relationship with the natural world that creates a different sense of perspective or context, but just a different feeling. You know, and we were talking about joy. For some people, there's a spontaneously arising joy. Like when you see a beautiful painting or something, that something external provokes this spontaneously arising joy. And there's also the possibility of a more intentional, like invitation, not like I'm going to make myself joyous by saying affirmations about joy, not that kind of thing, but more like an invitation, like who would I be if I just allowed? What would it feel like? What would it be like in this moment right now if I allow just a little bit more joy into my system? And it's a receptive invitation quality. And that same receptive invitational quality is some of what gets activated on wayfinding in nature, of inviting the quality of, you know, fill in the blank that's most relevant to a person's sort of next steps in their own growth, their own understanding of how to move through the world. So something shifts when nature is a part of that conversation. That doesn't happen sitting in an office or on Zoom.
You want to add anything to that, Dana?
I do. I love what you're sharing, Joel. And you know, the two of us are always holding, we're always dancing the polarity dance, you know, and we're also, you know, we work with people obviously and with ourselves about, we meet people where they are, and we also hold a big invitation for you know, this question, what time is it in the world? And what time is it in your life? And where does that meet? And so sometimes, and the work that we do, we've do it with individuals. We've done it all over the world. We have favorite places that we go to do this, but we do it with individuals. We've done it with partnerships. We've done it with teams. We do it with teams. And so part of this question about what time is it in my life is being able to look from the end of your life, being able to look from the end of your life and looking back at, what is this next chapter about? And often when we begin to look from the end of our life and we begin to look at what this next chapter is about, what's there almost always is what from the past is present that is asking for healing and that's asking to be met. And this whole process of being able to be in nature as nature, with nature being the catalyst for healing. And I think this, you know, many of us, and I can look in my own life, when I've gone through healing crises or unraveling in my life, was always been there. You know, my human parents weren't always there, but nature has always been there. As a mother, as a place that I could bring my tears, as a place that I felt my ground and support. And so being able to meet with nature, whatever's there that wants to be healed, also creates a release of energy, a release of creativity, a release of clarity about what's next. And before we go into nature, we often, mostly, we work with the leadership circle. So that's a really rich context where people can see how is it that I'm showing up for myself and how am I showing up in different contexts. And it often brings up a lot of things, you know, but for many people, it often brings up where energy's stuck, where that wants to be released for what the world is asking of that person right now. And so it's a very beautiful, natural, you know, very, I'm using these words and doesn't quite name it, but it feels like a very natural process. And one of the things, as you and I discovered, Joel, when we did this together a month ago, is as the person guiding, my experience is you're in it yourself. You can, you know, this, you have to be in the inquiry with these questions together. It becomes like a conversation between the earth, the sky, you, the person guiding, the person who's being guided. It becomes one thing. And that's what's so, you know, for me, so magical about it. And then we come out of the experience and it's like, okay, how do I integrate what I saw on the mountain back into the circumstances of my life and the context that I'm living in? How does that be? That's when it gets really fun.
Yeah, beautiful. There's so many questions here. I'm just curious, do you take people out for a day or for a weekend, or what's the kind of time scale you're often immersed in nature?
Yeah, you know, it varies. With if we're doing it with an individual, it can be anywhere from probably the better part of a day to 2 days. When we've done it with teams, it's generally 2 to 3 days. And it's partly the time in nature, but it's also, as Dana was saying, what leads up to it and what follows it. So there's a setting the stage and a sense of readiness and openness to the process, so that someone comes with a set of questions or inquiry or kind of a sense of unarticulated pull towards something that they're really challenged by.
Mm-hmm. And I started to do this about a decade ago. And now I do this, you know, sometimes Joel and I do this individually with people, and often we do it together. And I've also had other partners that I've done this with, including, you know, like an example, somebody who's second in command at a large global company. The company goes public, and this person's net worth, like, he has ridiculous generational money, and where he's left with is, now that my life's outer circumstances have changed, what's the purpose for the next phase of my life? What's the next part of my life about? And so we designed 3 days of you know, everything, for like a very comprehensive experience, but with the core going into nature and having both exploratory conversations and also doing ritual where there's a letting go of one life and a stepping into another life, you know, where there's conversations in afterwards where we bring a systems constellation together. So, you know, everything from something like that to a client that Joel and I are working with, who's in the Bay Area. He's a senior executive. And often when he came to us, but often when people come to us, they think they need to leave what they're doing to go on so they can make a bigger impact. And sometimes that is what is true for them. But maybe more often than not, the experience is that they're fleeing from something. And really the opportunity is like, okay, what if, what do we want to turn back towards? And what does the situation want to heal? And the very circumstances that they wanted to get away from starts to become the opportunity to heal and learn those lessons that are meant to learn before they go on to whatever's next. So one of the ways we work with this executive is every 3 months we spend a day with him, walking in the Marin Headlands and the hills there, and then we do coaching over Zoom. So there's a number of different ways to do it, and we work with a team. And one of Joel, what Joel hasn't spoken about here is you could say there's wayfinding as a process, and there's wayfinding as a way of being, which like being in tune with with what wants to happen next in your life. And Joel's a fourth degree black belt in Aikido and teaches Aikido and brings this Aikido sensibility and Aikido practices into the wayfinding work. So we also explore bringing not only, but particularly with teams, but not only walking in nature and doing ritual in nature, but also bringing Aikido practices to be more in tune with the flow of, I'll say poetically, what life is asking and what's here right now. So I realize I'm being a little abstract. And Joel, so you may, if you want to make a little more specific, if it's not landing here, I'm not sure.
Well, if I build on the Aikido piece, Aikido, one aspect of it is a way of meeting the world, particularly meeting conflict and energy coming at you, whether it's from a single point or multiple points, like a multi-vector, multi-force come things coming at you, and it's a way of sort of one recognizing there's a choice of fighting and combating and opposing or meeting with some kind of energetic blend. And how do I meet and greet and welcome that energy and then work with it. And so there's, we've been talking about sort of there's a spiritual aspect, there's a mental, there's an emotional aspect, but there's also a somatic aspect in our bodies. Like what's actually showing up, how I actually move my body, how my body moves in response to conflict and tension and pressure. And under pressure, we all have ideas and ideals about how we want to be and how we think we are under pressure and under conflict. And yet our body knows different, right? Despite our best intentions to want to meet conflict or difficulty in a particular way, we've got a pattern that's built into both our verbal, our language, our way of responding, our emotional patterns, and all of those are also kind of encoded into physical patterns. So sometimes the way to access that is actually through seeing it in action physically by seeing how people respond under pressure physically. Not in a way that obviously is dangerous or hurtful. It doesn't take much pressure. Sometimes just the slightest little push and our bodies get activated. And then we can start to study it and explore different ways of moving. So that's all kind of a part of it.
So it seems like there's a process here of going into nature. There's a healing that can take place that releases energy for this calling, this sense of what life wants with us to come in. And then there's this integration phase. And I'd actually like to talk about attuning to calling in the way that you've just named, Joel, and in life and inside of the practice. But maybe before we do that, let's just start with the healing. And so you're out in nature walking with a person or a team, and how do you I get this is not like a cookie cutter kind of process. It's very organic, to you're in nature. It's like you're following the movement of the showing. But yeah, what kind of what invites in that healing kind of phase or that healing energy? Like, do you have specific questions or ways of being with a person? Does it arise spontaneously?
Some of it is arises in conversation, like just in the process of deep listening and conversation. I know, Joel, I'm sure you've experienced in conversation where as you show up with listening in a way that allows someone to actually discover and speak things that they didn't necessarily know or had never spoken before, just by the fact that someone is actually when they say holding space or listening deeply allows for deeper speaking when someone's really listening. But we also do different kind of meditations, some of them sitting, some of them walking meditations. We use poetry, we use writing, and have people sometimes, give some prompts and have do journaling and free writing. So there's a lot of different modalities. Dana mentioned sort of polarities. So oftentimes we find ourselves exploring the different polarities. I did a wayfinding with two women leaders, executives, just before the holidays. And towards the end of the time together, particularly prompted by writing and journaling, that they both sort of in parallel came to this recognition that in their marriages that they had actually become someone that they didn't really like who they were, that they'd lost a part of themselves that was the playful, fun partner and spouse in the process of parenting and raising a family and being sort of energetic leaders out in the world. That there was a quality of loss around just the joy in their home life. And that was quite, Dana talked about healing. And so this recognition on each of their parts that they had in their journey of accomplishing, raising a family and doing all this in the world, they'd lost a part of themselves. That also then circled back to, how does the loss of that part of themselves not just affect their home life and themselves and their marriage, but who they are and how they show up at work? Because that old saying, wherever you go, there you are. So that, that led to then some design of, sort of experiments, like what might you do to experiment with reawakening that part of yourself? And at the same time, sort of acknowledging or appreciating the sense of loss and grief over having lost that part of yourself for some period of time. But it's going back to your question, Joel, this mix of walking, of conversation, of meditation, of journaling, that a lot of different kinds of modalities that emerge. Dana, what would you
When we're attuned to ourselves, to the moment that we're in and to the other person, there are things that come up that are more subtle. And so often I find clients say something that's quite profound, but they say it, they throw it like a throwaway line. And so one of the things I do is I try to listen and slow things down and really say, could you say again what you just said? And when the person retrieves the feeling with the words that they say, and there's someone else attuned to them, often there's an emotion, strong emotion that's there. So just the simple capacity to be able to attune to oneself and then just be there feeling with the other person and paying attention to their words. There's so much that's there. And it's, often in the initial conditions at the beginning of anything, what wants to be revealed is often right there. And so paying attention and naming what's there, being curious about what's there. I often find, and I'm speaking to both, I'm speaking to both the process of you asked about healing, Joel. So I'm speaking to both the process during being in nature where that happens, but I'm also speaking in any coaching interaction. In any coaching interaction, if I'm feeling them, but also attuned to myself, often there's something flashes in front of me. And it's not fully formulated, but it's both a feeling and an almost like a visual flash. And I've learned to trust that. And I ask the client permission. I say, what I might give back here, I don't pretend that it's true, but is it okay if I reflect it back? And then it often touches on something that wasn't obvious, but it is like a gold mine. And I believe this comes when, Joel was saying we go into nature and what opens up is a new horizon that wasn't there before. And my experience is often when that new horizon opens up, what also opens up is where energy is stuck. That's asking to be liberated, to be able to climb that. I'm mixing my metaphors here, but to be able to meet that horizon, right? So, and it, we didn't, and that's what I have found in myself over the last couple of weeks as new possibilities have opened up and new horizons have opened up for me. What's also I've also bumped up against edges, emotional edges, things from the past that I didn't know were there until I began to step into this new horizon. So I think, one way to talk about this is action inquiry, is you open up a new space of possibility, you begin to experiment. In that experiment, you run up against your own edges. You also run up against edges in the system or edges in relationship, in the I, we, and it domains. But you could see where the edges are and you take that information in, and then there's healing to do.
Yeah, and what I love about this move into nature is the ritual of it, that it's you're not just doing a coaching session on Zoom or something. No, there's a ritual of the preparatory work that's needed, but also the traveling to nature, the crossing that threshold into nature, and the like you've named that you're in a different environment, the vista, and you alluded to like you're in relationship with nature. Nature is a key partner or element to the unfolding, and that just feels like so potent, and if we think like that's how we evolved, isn't it? For most of our evolution, we've been hanging out in these natural environments. And could you say a little bit more about what it is you think that nature, what's going on there with nature? Because I mean, I'm just gonna kind of take back my question a moment. It seems like a common theme on this podcast and in my own life, this as we move through these times, that one of the things we're coming into deep relationship with is how we've perceived who we are, as being this kind of apex predator at the top, you know, and in control of nature, separate from nature. I can extract from nature, and that's being decentered. And we're seeing ourselves as we are, the things we are. We're natural, we are nature, and we're intimately connected. And so what is it about for you, like the nature? What is going on there with nature when, you know, when what's it doing? If that's the right question, but I think you can take it. Yeah.
What is it?
Do it in
Yeah.
the,
Maybe this is
what's it
unfair,
being?
but I'd like to turn the tables because listeners don't know this, but you participated in a wayfinding with Dana not that long ago.
I did, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Curious, how would you answer that question for yourself around the role of nature in that conversation? What did you notice?
Well,
You can
first of
decline
all,
if you want to decline, but
yeah, first of all, there's probably many things I could say about it, but you know, in a way, what I just named, like there's the entering into the for me, what was a magical space, you know, the Black Forest in the south of Germany, and with a beloved friend and guide, and you know, there's just something that stripped away like the routine and the habituation of everyday life. You know, that makes my life sound a little bit a little bit, I have a really beautiful life, but you know what I mean? It's like it's not an everyday experience, and that opened up something inside of me. And so yeah, you know, I think on a deeper level, it's like it's a deep sense of kind of well-being, and a sense of being held by nature in a particular way that allows like a relaxation and an opening to take place. And then I would say there's even this felt sense of, you know, like a kind of this unity with nature as well. Like there's a kind of transmission of for me, like of being in the forest. And you know, I'm just touching into it now as I reflect on it. Like I can feel like a like mother nature, and like a sense of being called home, you know. But that home is being called into my future too, so there's some things that come up.
That's just, I'm touched by that. That's just really beautifully spoken. And I think part of what you spoke about is this notion of being in a different setting where the day-to-day life is stripped away and the sense of anticipation. So I think there's a quality of ritual, like crossing a threshold, that it's not just like calling you as a friend and saying, let's go for a walk. It's being intentional about creating a time and a place where I'm deliberately putting myself into a deeper set of questions about life and who I am and where I'm going and how I meet life. And this act of sort of being deliberate about that with some lead up to it, and the sense of going somewhere and crossing a threshold into a different process, a different experience, a different setting, that of and by itself can be very powerful. And then that threshold being into nature with those qualities of nature that you described and that we've been talking about adds to that.
And you know, you both use the term threshold, and part of I think both of us could tell a story back stories back to our childhood about how our relationship with nature has shaped us both and shaped our work. But I won't go all the way back, but around 2008, 2009, I had a big unraveling in my life. And I went as the end of a marriage, the end of my relationship with my business, my community, you know, all kind health, everything, money. And I took my fear and my pain to this mountain that I would walk up. And then I went and I did a vision quest, which is a 10-day experience with a 3-day, 3-night solo. And it was so profound. And it really both provided a space for healing, like for mothering. And it also opened up a new horizon and a new pace for me. And the person who led my quest was generous enough to then apprentice me where we would bring leaders on these longer vision quests, leaders from all over the world, and we would take them on these 10-day experiences. And then this naturally became the essence of that experience, became something that Joel and I developed into something that didn't need to take 10 days. But it has some of that DNA in it. And when you go off to do the solo, you go from, I forgot the three phrases that they use, but there's a time where you're preparing for the solo, where you still are in normal Chronos time, and then there's a ritual where you go out, you're ritualistically gone out for your solo, and it's called crossing the threshold. And when you cross that threshold, there's a sort of liminal space you're in. And everything become you begin to relate to everything being a mirror for you. Like most of us live like nature is something animate that's out there rather than what's arising in the world, and in nature is an expression of me in the biggest sense of me. And so ritualistically, those 3 days, everything becomes this mirror and this mystery, which it is anyway. It just gets ritualistically activated and initiated. And you then come back from that solo and you're initiated back into incorporation or integration time. And where you take the truth that you saw when you were in the threshold space, and you begin to integrate it with the rest of your life and with life. And there's something, so that's a long way. One is I just want to name that because that happens. And I noticed, Joel, when you and I were in the Black Forest and we were walking, time disappeared. And we were in this ritualistic space, even though we didn't necessarily, sit, smudge and do all that stuff. And then we came back into life, and we came back into a different kind of relationship there. I think there's something about that, that's also key to this experience each time we do it.
Yeah, and it feels to me like I'm glad you brought up the vision quest you went on, because it seems like that way of knowing that liminal space you describe, actually we could access that more in our daily lives would be a good thing. This kind of re-enchantment of the world, and a kind of accessing the subtle senses and the
Yeah.
imaginal, and this capacity to attune to guidance and information on these different channels and our everyday experience. Where, because what was interesting on that walk was, we had like a few hours, but it was just perfect. The timing, in a way, it's a silly question to say, like, how long do you need to go out? Because once you've crossed that threshold, time becomes a different thing, and you kind of it is what it is, So revelation occurs, and it's not like too little or too much. So I appreciate you brought that in, and I can imagine that, yeah, even on these journeys you're doing, that space is opening up. And I'm curious if leaders respond to that and actually feel the call for that in their lives too, you know, more access to that.
I think, Joel, what you're speaking about is this notion of spontaneously arising insight, like a spontaneously arising knowing of something that isn't a product of sort of our usual kind of grinding away thinking, like picking a problem and taking it apart and putting it back together and making lists of pros and cons and, solving it through some kind of analytic process, but rather a process of more releasing ourselves from that compulsive, grinding away quality of thinking, and in a more expansive way, in an effortless way, an insight arises. So the question is, gee, is that something that I have no control over, and I just hope someday maybe I get an insight about this challenge, or is there something I can develop? Is it a capacity I can develop in myself to actually access some broader field of, you could call it a field of intelligence or field of knowing, out of which these insights arise? And so, for some people, so our answer is yes, that's a capacity one can develop. And for some people, it happens when they're jogging or showering or driving their car on a very familiar route. But it's a capacity that easily can be developed through walking and spending time in nature. And there's the quality of relaxed, spacious, I don't even want to say thinking because it doesn't feel like thinking in the traditional sense, but the quality or texture of our thoughts is more relaxed and more spacious. And in that quality of relaxed, spacious, spaciousness, is when those kind of insights more spontaneously arise. And it's so necessary because so much of what we talk about is complexity and leaders being over their heads, and you can't solve everything by rationally figuring it out and through analytic thinking. So this notion of being able to access some larger intelligence and having insights, Dana was talking about it just in his quality of listening and being with people. There's a sense, a felt sense of something that might be auditory, might be visual, it might be more kinesthetic, but learning to pay attention to those moments of knowing, not like they're truth, but trusting them and checking them out, and exploring them becomes a really important capacity in navigating this what we were starting to talk about at the beginning of this conversation on the challenges of the larger world we're in and the multiple crises. But Dana, how would you speak to that?
Oh, I'm afraid to even start. Let me say a little rather than a lot. One way, so when Joel and I work with teams, we have a, you know, we have all these frameworks and all these tools. And one way to say what we're doing with a team, in working in complexity is to be able to create an environment where that team's center of gravity, you know, their capacity to work with, to name tensions, to work with those tensions, to release energy, to operate at a higher level of complexity, a higher level of functioning than they do on their own, and then to give them enough practice and enough tools so they can do that without us. You know, I'll call, you could call that vertical development. But like what it seems, so it seems to me that what happens is we go into this setting and we tap into this field, this larger field. And in this larger field, things slow down, energy possibilities open, energy's released, and then people go, then we step back into our lives and we come up against energetic glitches. So this is like the healing aspect. But I realize I'm not even speaking to your question. I'm speaking to something else. But what I'm finding is that, like, what this work looks like in action in an organization when it's after they get off the mountain, is the capacity to be able, in a difficult, contentious, stuck conversation, to be able to, for our clients to be able to name what's going on. And often there's a cognitive framework like the polarities or the integral four quadrants or David Cantor's structural dynamics, or there's some simple sticky way to name what's happening, which makes it not personal. And it gives people a common way to see it. And then it creates a safe space for people to drop down into the emotional and somatic space and work through what's there in a safe way. And then energy gets liberated and new ideas and action starts to happen and coordination starts to happen. But it's like this movement between, between opening up something new, coming up against energetic blockages, meeting, being with each other in a deep relational space, then bringing a bringing a framework out, which allows for a way to begin to move into action. So it's this dance between action, reflection, feeling, and it starts to become one thing rather than like this fragmented piece. But the work in nature becomes the touchstone, becomes the shared experience, becomes the space that people can find their way back to. So I'm not sure what question I was answering, but I hope that it was somewhat illuminating.
Yeah, well, just on that note, the kind of place where I landed stays with me very clearly, you know, from our wayfinding. So yeah, it makes sense when you call it a touchstone. It feels like that. It's
yeah. Kind of, yeah. What do you touch back into now and what can you access? That's
yeah. Yeah. I mean, joy, like choosing joy, that was really where that came from. You know, like, and it sounds like, oh, choose joy. That sounds, I don't know, like a very simple thing or, you know, a kind of affirmation, but it's a verbal expression of a very potent somatic energetic experience. So
yeah,
that's what it points me towards. And, so what I'm hearing is in each of you is that there's actually, you know, being in nature in this sense can also open us to, you know, this different ways of knowing, where this sense of calling can come in and insights can come in that have a different feeling to them. And because that comes back to the question I had when you were talking, Joel, earlier about, you know, Aikido and how we can kind of learn to attune somatically to what's arising. So, yeah, I guess like what I'm hearing, and I want to check this, is sounds like you're saying when you're in that liminal space in nature and you've been opening with these questions and the inquiry, and then there's just this felt sense that people connect to of what's calling them. And then, you know, they just feel that, or maybe you can reflect that back to them as the guide. And it's like, I'm curious from there, is then this sense of integration, like, is a, you know, what do you invite them into on if they connect to this sense of calling and realization about where life is taking them?
I guess I think of it as a conversation. So if we think about wayfinding, a time in nature, is a conversation with my with oneself, with the coach, with nature. How do I, as a participant in that process, continue that conversation? And you know, Dana mentioned each of us have our own practice of generally we go for walks every day. And so, you know, I went for my walk yesterday, and you know, there's some part of my mind that says, oh, I should use this time well. Maybe I'll listen to a podcast, or I'll use it as an opportunity to call one of my kids and stay in touch. And so there's that always that tendency to use my time well, be, you know, get something done, to produce something. So I didn't do any of that. And I just took the time to be with the walk. And in the process had one of those very surprising insights about a particular situation that's been present in my life for many years that it just had never occurred to me before. And it was such a surprise because it wasn't even a situation I was thinking about. And it just arose as I was looking at some trees that were along this path that I walk by just about every day and saw something fresh. And then this thought came. Most of us don't create enough slow, spacious time in our day to allow for that. We're moving, 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 moving. And so having a simple practice, particularly kind of post a wayfinding kind of experience, to incorporate some practice, whether it's a sitting meditation or walking or a touch point conversation with a friend or a colleague, something that allows for a slowing down and paying attention in a different way. And I say that's something, you know, anyone can do at any time. It's just a practice to integrate into each of our lives as such an important practice.
It's also a time to, particularly when we're walking with someone, to get to know, when you say, I have a conversation with myself, there's a lot of selves there. You know, Joel and I just did a program called Inner Team Dialogue with a guy named Paul Wyman. And, you know, part of getting to know, part of who shows up are our inner team and some of the characters on our inner team that need to have, that want to be explored more. And I find all the time when I'm on walks, there are different aspects of this self that want to be, have something to say. And Joel Monk, that was something that we did together. And we began to explore different aspects of ourselves, you know? And so I think that also, you know, this executive that Joel and I walk with every 3 months in the Bay Area, we had a very profound conversation with him about I believe it was like to explore the responsible one, which I know that resonates for you too, Joel Monk, but to explore with him the responsible one and the hero that one's been in his life and has contributed to so many. But it's also, the responsible one is also kind of drowned out the playful one. And at this time in his life, the playful aspect of himself, his life force, his create, you know, needs to come on the stage in a healthier way for him to meet the moment that's being asked of him. And so I think being in nature allows us to relax the, you know, kind of the way that we move through things and open something else up that's important. I see you smiling, Joel Monk. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about my journey with that and the dutiful one and how, you know, there was an honoring of the role that he played and a kind of alchemical transformation into dutiful, you know, which felt like it was honoring the energy of him without, not castigating him, but also kind of relieving him of needing to step in and be dutiful all the time. So yeah, I really appreciate that part of the wayfinding and how nature enabled. There's just something about walking around and looking around and being moving and being in that conversation that's also just really, really works for me. You know, it kind of keeps things moving and flowing as well. So, anything else you want to add as we're just coming towards the end of our time
together? Yeah. I wanted to add something from the previous riff we were on is, we create this threshold space where we create a ritual so that in a certain way, it's like turning on a switch where we begin to notice how everything is reflecting us and everything is alive and has something to tell, but that's there all the time anyway. And when you go on the Aikido mat, Joel, it's like stepping over into a threshold space. You know, when I was recently in a systems constellation, all of a sudden you begin to move in relation in a certain flow as if you're in this animate, alive world. Well, that's what's happening all the time anyway. And I think the integration phase of which is the work that we do, building capacities and working in the organizations with that leader and where what they found on the mountain meets the complexity of how they work with their board around their challenges. That's the frothy edge here of bringing that same truth of this alive world that's expressing through us, but it's also showing us ourselves. And so, it's and I think we can all speak about this. Like, it's so wonderful to be up on the mountain, but then the work happens when we come back and where that experience meets the our real lives. So I guess that's what's alive for me right now.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just putting myself in the imagined seat of a listener to this. And I think what I'd say is that this whole wayfinding process and being in nature is something that any of us can internalize into our day-to-day way of being and relating, of feeling connected to a larger whole, of slowing down, noticing, listening, any of those qualities of living, sort of doing all the little things on my to-do list and getting through my day, while I also hold the larger questions of life, and having those live kind of together. And so, we found spending time in nature is a way to really ground those and provide a touchstone, as you said, Joel, for that. But it's ideally a touchstone that we bring back into a quality of moving through our day-to-day life. And so it's just an invitation to explore that and inquire into that, regardless of what your starting point is.
Yeah, that's what I'm taking away with me. Like, I really appreciate this almost two levels of like the insights and the sense of calling and healing that can take place as you're doing wayfinding, but also like wayfinding as a way of being, which, actually we can live day to day, and that can bring so much. Like, that's kind of what I wanted to say with the re-enchanting the world, and walk for me, just the simple practice of walking around and with curious eyes, like open to the world, and it's just so fulfilling and enlivening, and also allows for like a deeper connection to that calling and what's pulling me. So
yeah. And Joel, bringing those curious eyes, to the contractions that are present in the meeting when there's an elephant in the room and all of a sudden the energy's dead. Like that's, I think that's where the, for me, the frothy edge of this is that like the medicine is in the wound. Like, oh, not like, oh, that was back on the mountain, but what's stuck right now? And what can we begin to be curious and explore about collectively? Because we all know, either whether it's a one-on-one coaching session or it's working with a team, being able to bring that quality to the stuck places allows for those to be doorways into the next horizon.
Well, amen to that. Yeah, I'm glad we kind of, feels like we kind of finished the conversation by bringing this part back in. And yeah, just really grateful for the time we've had together. Where can we find out more about wayfinding and what you're up to? You could let us know about your individual websites or the wayfinding site.
Yeah. We've got a website called wayfindinghorizons.com. And that's where our wayfinding work is represented. My website is just my name, joeljanowitz.com. And Dana, yours is?
Dana Carmen Integral Consulting. But you could access both of our websites through the Wayfinding website.
Yeah.
Joel, Dana, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
That was fun, Joel. Thank you.
Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.